This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey Systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget. And more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey Systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. And it's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. Tony Bennett. That's Mr. Tony Bennett, and Mr. Bennett, of course, lives over in Great Britain, and he is leading a drive to try to get people to petition the Queen through sending in postcards to refuse to go along with the surrender of British sovereignty. Now, for those of you who don't understand what's going on, why, of course, you have this effort to unite all of Europe. And, of course, it was sold to the people initially. It was just going to be a trade agreement. Everybody was going to benefit from the trade agreement. Wasn't this going to be wonderful? But, of course, truly it was an effort to establish a European government and take away the sovereignty of the individual nations. And most people don't want that. Most people want to maintain their sovereignty. But there is a small, wicked group of men, and largely encouraged and financed from here in the United States, but certainly with lots of help over there in Europe and Great Britain, who want to destroy the sovereignty of Great Britain and, of course, simply remove the authority of the duly elected representatives and place the power of government, the lives of the people of Great Britain under the control of an unelected bureaucracy. So, Mr. Bennett, thank you so very much for being with us. You picked the story up from there. How do things look over in Great Britain now?
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. And it would be very hard to improve on the summary you've just given listeners of the situation in the United Kingdom and Europe. I'd be hard put to...
Go right ahead. Would you speak up just a little bit louder, if you would, please?
Yeah, I'd be hard put to add to it, but the critical moment we've reached at now in Europe is the imminent passing into law of the Lisbon Treaty. And it's important that people understand that it's not just another European treaty, but this is an attempt to impose a European constitution. And if I can just develop the point, it's not just an add-on to the European Constitution. Imposing the European Constitution means that the British Constitution is under threat and is being overruled, in effect. So we've reached that critical point, and there are a number of groups of us in the United Kingdom fighting very strongly to resist this. And also, may I say, in the Republic of Ireland, where there'll be a referendum on this treaty next month.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, how effective is your battle? How effective is your effort to counter the control of the media there and to get the truth out to the British people? How do the British people feel about giving up their sovereignty as a nation and simply losing the tradition which is Great Britain?
Well, I think what we must recognize here, Dr. Stan, is the increasing disconnection between what I would call the political class, I think you referred to them as a few evil men at the top, and the rest of the country. Now, let me tell you, for example, that there have been a range of opinion polls which suggests that 90% of the British people want a referendum on the European Constitution, on this Lisbon Treaty, and nearly 90% would reject it. And not only that, but a most unusual event took place last month, whereby in 10 parliamentary constituencies covering hundreds of thousands of people, there was an actual referendum held on this very question. In other words, ballot papers were sent around to 10 full parliamentary constituencies, and the results were amazing. 90% wanted a referendum on the European Constitution, on this treaty, and 89% said that they would vote against this treaty if given the chance. Now, the remarkable thing is that the government, in the face of that, is not yielding and not conceding. So
hold that thought right there, please. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Tony Bennett. He's from Great Britain, as you can tell from his accent. And Mr. Bennett was just saying that there's a tremendous desire on the part of the British people to maintain the sovereignty of their nation. There was a recent referendum held in a number of parliamentary districts there, where the people were asked whether or not they wanted to have a referendum, you know, on whether or not England should give up its sovereignty and join the European Union. And 89% of the people who responded, first of all, 90% of the people wanted a referendum, and 89% said that they would vote against, you know, of course, the Constitution or any effort to do away with British sovereignty. But it doesn't really matter what the common people want. It appears that the people in charge of the reins of government are intent upon bringing about this this destruction of Great Britain as a sovereign nation and merging it into the European Union, even over and above the will of the people. As you pick the story up there, please, Mr. Bennett.
Well, the current situation is really that there have been a number of what I would say have been effective campaigns by many organisations. It's important to understand that in the United Kingdom there are a number of disparate groups who campaign against our membership of the European Union, and they don't always combine effectively, but nevertheless there have been some excellent campaigns, and yet we are within weeks of seeing our Parliament approve the Lisbon Treaty, the European Constitution. We were promised a referendum. I didn't mention this, but we were promised one by all three political parties at the last election. Every single one of them went into the election with a manifesto committing them to a referendum on the European Constitution. So there's a great sense at the moment in which we feel cheated. And that comes to the fore very much when we see that the Irish people are going to be given a referendum. They go to the referendum on June the 15th. So we can't understand in the United Kingdom why the Irish people can have a referendum and we can't.
Well, don't you? I suspect that they've already polled the Irish people and they know how they're going to vote. That's the only reason they're letting them vote. They know how the English people are going to vote, and that's why they're not going to let them vote.
Well, I think you're right. However, there has been a most remarkable swing of opinion in Ireland over the last 6 months. Unfortunately, a number of things have started to go badly wrong with the Irish economy. And although you're quite right, 6 months ago it looked like plain sailing for the Irish government. They're in real trouble now, and I think the vote will be...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Bennett is saying, of course, that Great Britain, even though all three of the major political parties at the last election, agreed that the people would be allowed to have a referendum on whether to go up into the European Union, they all lied. And, of course, they have no intention of allowing that. Mr. Brown, who is the current Prime Minister, had promised there'd be a referendum, and now he's gone back on his promise. But the interesting thing is that the people in Ireland are going to be allowed to vote on the referendum. The people in Great Britain are not. And even, of course, what Mr. Bennett was pointing out was that certainly, 6 months ago when the agreement was made that the Irish would get a chance to vote, why the Irish people overall were pretty much in favor of going into the European Union. But Ireland's had a lot of trouble with their economy. Things are not so good. And, well, Mr. Bennett, what do you think will happen when the Irish do have an opportunity to vote? Do you think that the majority will repudiate the European Union? What are your thoughts?
Well, we're hoping for a miracle. We're hoping the Irish people will help us out. Incidentally, the legal position on the European Constitution, this Lisbon Treaty, is that if the Irish reject the treaty, then the whole Lisbon Treaty falls throughout all 27 nations of the European Union. So you can see how critical it is and what a huge effort is being put into the pro-EU side in Ireland. They can hardly afford to lose. But anyway, we will see. If it goes through, then the Lisbon Treaty will come into effect at the end of 2009. But already the European Union is taking steps to implement the Lisbon Treaty, even though it's not been agreed. To give you a specific example, the European Union is pressing ahead with plans to set up European Union embassies throughout the world. Now, that for us in Britain means that no longer would we have British embassies in all the key countries in the world, but we would be represented by EU embassies. So, for example, there might no longer be a British embassy in Chile or Argentina or even Canada or some European countries. We would be represented by a European Union embassy. And, of course, that is just one of many ways in which this Lisbon Treaty dismantles national sovereignty. Probably one of the other most important points, if I can mention two other points briefly. The first is that the Lisbon Treaty makes us all compulsorily citizens of the European Union. Now, I was born a British subject in 1947. My status was changed to that of a British citizen in 1981. Now I face the prospect of becoming a European Union citizen, which will involve not only certain rights but also a number of unspecified duties. Now that is very much a step too far so far as we're concerned.
Well, you know, Chris, I think that people must understand that there are people who have a different worldview. They have always wanted a world government. That's what the First World War was about. That was what the Second World War was about. The First World War was to bring in the League of Nations. The Second World War was to bring in the United Nations. And when it didn't, of course, come up with the desired result, why, I think now that they're looking towards a Third World War. But in the background, of course, is this idea to unite these regional areas, just as they're uniting Europe. They're going to unite the United States into the North American Union, and we will lose our Constitution and our constitutional guarantees of freedom. The new Constitution will guarantee us all the rights, except, of course, when the government wants to take them away. And that is the way with every Constitution except American. And the American Constitution, we have our God-given rights, and the government cannot take them away because our rights come from God. In Great Britain, of course, their rights come from government. Now, my understanding is that you're leading a drive to try to get people to contact the Queen. Would you develop this? Why would you expect the Queen would be against, of course, this effort to unite Europe? Certainly, we know that working behind the scenes for many years have been the royalty of Europe going right along with this concept of uniting Europe. Do you really think the Queen, if petitioned by sufficient numbers of her subjects, would really dare to step out of line and say and refuse to go along with this?
Well, the position of the Queen and the monarch, I'll try and summarise it briefly, but the Queen, of course, is our head of state, and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is not the head of state, so that the Queen takes precedence over the Prime Minister. And there is one weapon that she has to exercise an influence, and that is the giving or withholding of royal assent to any Bill of Parliament. But ultimately, the Queen can refuse to sign any bill into law or can defer signing such a bill. And although this power has been seldom used, it has been used effectively on two or three occasions in the last century. And if you go onto the British Parliament website, it is still quite clear that the Queen can exercise that power. Now, given that there is this disconnect, Dr. Stan, that I mentioned between the British people's clear desire for a referendum and to oppose this treaty, and our politicians who are giving away our independence, it seems to us that it's our duty, our right and our duty to approach the Queen and petition her in this way. We have got that legal right of petition under the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights and all these other things which you in the United States and Canada would know all about. And although we only started this campaign 3 or 4 months ago, we've already had nearly 250,000 people send these postcards to the Queen, and we're getting orders for them at about 2,000 a day. So there's a great deal of interest in the campaign. And ultimately, if the Queen feels that her people should have a referendum, she can delay signing this bill until we have a referendum. That's what we're pressing for.
I see, but of course the people on the other side really don't care how the people feel. They have a goal, they have an objective, and I think they're really quite ruthless. I wouldn't be, I'd think it'd be above them to rig the elections. They certainly rig the elections here in the United States. I don't know why they couldn't rig the elections over there in Great Britain. The only thing that's really going to stop this, if there's enough of British people who really care. I'm really encouraged to hear that, you know, that 90% of the people in your recent parliamentary elections did vote and say that they wanted to have the right to vote on the Lisbon Constitution. And certainly, did that get much of a play in the media over there? What sort of treatment are you getting from the media, or is your media as controlled as ours is?
Well, I'm going to give you an analogy, if I may, from another country, and I would compare the United Kingdom with Denmark. But let me just tell you a little story about what happened in Denmark 6 years ago, when Denmark had a vote on whether to keep their currency or not. Their currency is called the crown, or the krona. And the powers that be very much wanted the Danish people to give up their currency, the crown, and go into the euro. Now, on that occasion, out of 40 main media outlets, the TV, the radio, the main mass media, and so on, 38 out of 40 of those outlets all wanted the Danish people to give up their currency and go into the euro. 38 out of 40. Despite that, the Danish people voted by 53% to 47% to reject going into the euro and to keep their currency. Now, that again, I think, illustrates the key point that there is this disconnect between the wishes of the people and the views of the political elite. And I think you would probably agree with me that the political elite and the media are very closely intertwined at the moment.
Absolutely.
I would just like to go back to the other key point about the Lisbon Treaty and the European Constitution, if I may, just to make the point very clear as to what the issue is. At the moment, any European law has to be put into effect by the British Parliament and by the other parliaments. So what happens at the moment is the European powers that be propose laws. They're called directives or regulations, but directives they're mainly called. And then the parliaments of the European Union, all 27, have to implement those directives. By statutory regulation, there has to be a debate in Parliament and a vote in those 27 parliaments. Now, the difference here, Dr. Stan, with this Lisbon Treaty, and one of the reasons why we're fighting it so hard, is that once this treaty is implemented, European Union powers that be, that is the European Commission, can make laws and impose them without the consent of the 27 parliaments of the nation states in the European Union. So I think you can see what a major shift of power that is. Our parliament, in effect, will be virtually nullified because the European Commission is taking the power to impose any law it wishes.
And of course, the thing is,
our parliament might as well not exist once the Lisbon Treaty comes into effect.
Well, of course, I've interviewed Mr. Ashley Moat, who's a member of the European Parliament and elected from Great Britain. And Mr. Moat says, you know, we have no power either. In other words, your elected parliament will have no effect. The people who've been elected to the European Parliament will have no effect. Everything will be run by a bureaucracy just as it is in the Soviet Union or any totalitarian country. Is there concern over there, although you're moving, of course, into almost like a Soviet system with a master bureaucracy that will control everything?
I think amongst some of us that there is that concern. In fact, we often call it the European Soviet Union for those reasons. But I would have to say, to be honest, that the United Kingdom is a relatively prosperous country, despite some economic problems. People are affluent. People are interested in other things these days. They're not that interested in the subject of the constitution of the European Union. They're interested in day-to-day issues. They're interested in sport. They're interested in entertainment and other such things. And so perhaps the level of concern about the possible future direction of the European Union is not as profound as it should be.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Mr. Bennett, apparently you have the same sort of problems in your country that we have here because, you know, affluence is a wonderful blessing. Affluence is a terrible curse because, of course, people become apathetic and indifferent towards, you know, what's really important. And, of course, freedom, individual liberty is the very thing that makes life worthwhile. But as long as people are affluent, why, of course, they're not concerned. My hope, of course, is that the coming economic turmoil here in the United States, and I suspect you're going to feel it over there before very long. I know that some of your banks, at least one of your major banks, Northern Rock, went down here for a while and had to be taken over by the government. But I'm only hoping and praying that the economic crisis that we're seeing unfolding in America at least is going to awakening the people here in our country to the fact that if they don't get involved and stand up and be counted, they're going to be counted out. Is there, of course, any growing concern with the economy over there in Great Britain or people going blithely along as if the good times are never going to stop?
Well, just to update you on the economy, the last 6 to 12 months have seen a bit of a dip in some areas. There is a similar crisis in house prices as there is in the United States. I'm not sure how extensive it is in the United States, but there is a similar effect here. There is a rise in the cost of living, but it's by no means all doom and gloom. We're suffering a little bit of a dip, but I wouldn't put it higher than that. Incidentally, if I can just perhaps bring up another related subject.
Sure, go right ahead.
One of the interesting things that is happening at the same time as we're losing our independence, it's quite clear that Britain is becoming a much, much less Christian country in all sorts of ways. And I was very interested the other day to see that according to a recent survey, a recent think tank, that organisation has judged that Britain is less Christian now than it has been for over 1,000 years. And I think that's significant because I think a Christian country values its heritage, values its democracy, values its liberty. And after all, many of the liberties that we have today were achieved in effect by a Christian revolution back in 1688 when we overthrew the previous Stuart monarchy, very strongly Roman Catholic, and we put a Protestant on the throne of England. And that was very much a Christian, a biblical revolution. And it seems that we've turned away from God, we've turned away from Christ, we've turned away from Christianity. And in the process, we seem to have lost our care for our nation and its values. I do feel that there is a decline in our society generally.
Well, I think that is really so tragic because, of course, I believe the freedoms of your country and of my country really were intimately associated with the Christian beliefs. And, of course, as Thomas Jefferson had said so well, The God who gave us life gave us liberty, but can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? And then they went on to say, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. And I was amazed when I heard that the Archbishop of Canterbury recently had suggested that maybe you should adopt some of the Muslim laws. Let the Muslims live under their own system of Sharia law over there in Great Britain. I mean, to me, that is a frightening concept. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Bennett. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Bennett was simply talking about how it seems that the people of Great Britain are turning away from their Christian heritage, and Great Britain is a far less Christian nation than it one time was. And my response was that certainly recently we read where the Archbishop of Canterbury, the head of the Anglican Church in Great Britain, had actually suggested that perhaps England should be more respectful of Muslim laws, and we should let the Muslims living in England certainly abide by Sharia law rather than having to follow the traditional laws of Great Britain. Were you as shocked with that thought as I was?
Well, what I will say is that the Archbishop of Canterbury took a great deal of stick from that from many quarters. He was very much strongly criticised for saying that, but in a sense, it's not a total surprise by any means, because the Church of England is very much tending to see Islam as a kind of a partner religion, almost sharing similar beliefs with Christians in one God and so on. And I find this very, very difficult to understand, because without going into the details, there is a great contrast between the Christian understanding of God and the Muslim, Islamic understanding. I think it's worth pointing out, Dr. Stan, that one of the anxieties we have here in Europe is that the next country to be admitted to the European Union may well be Turkey, which is largely an Asian country and is almost entirely Muslim, and the Turkish population is somewhere between 85 and 90 million. That's a very large nation. And without a doubt, if Turkey was to be admitted to the European Union, the Islamic Muslim influence would increase significantly. And not only that, but there is talk of Morocco, which is a completely African country, applying to join the European Union shortly. So it seems that the Christian influence in the European Union is about to diminish further with the probable arrival of an entirely Muslim nation, which will mean that all those Turks, if they wish, can settle in any other European Union country. And the accession of Morocco as well would be a further Islamic nation. So you can see that the balance of power is shifting from Europe being largely Christian, at least in name, and a very significant Muslim influence is advancing.
Well, of course, you know, the importance for a nation state to exist, it has to be bound together with a common language. And here in the United States, we have people from all over, from the Orient. We have people, you know, from Africa, but from South America. But of course, the thing that has bound us together is a common language. They're trying to undermine that today here in America and trying to make us a multilingual country. And that's why, of course, many of our leading politicians object to having English the official language. And you're certainly going to find out where you are. And then a common religion. And of course, most people here in the United States would be considered themselves Christian. But, of course, we have a growing, they're actively encouraging Muslims to come to the United States to destroy that continuity, that bond that binds us together with a common language and common belief in God and common values and cultures. And I'm sure you feel this in Europe and specifically in Great Britain, where you've had a tremendous influx of foreigners with different languages, different cultures, different religious beliefs, haven't you?
Indeed. If I can just pick you up on the language point, because that brings me to another very interesting dimension that we've not discussed yet. But, of course, as you quite rightly say, America is bound by one language, and we have dozens of languages on the European Union continent. But one of the things that we haven't covered so far is the implications of the Lisbon Treaty. or the European Constitution, as I prefer to call it, on the other Commonwealth countries. And it's not generally recognised that there are 16 countries altogether in the world which also have the Queen of the United Kingdom as their Queen. Australia is one, for example. Canada is another. Now, there are at least two organisations I'm aware of in Australia. One is called the Australia League of Rights, I think, and there's the Australian Monarchist League. I think I've got the names right. But they too are worried because they have the Queen as their head of state. You may be aware that in the year 2000, 8 years ago, the Australians had a vote on whether or not to become a republic. And they decided by quite an emphatic majority, I think it was something like 54% to 46%, that they wished to retain the Queen as their head of state. The same applies in Canada and 14 other Commonwealth countries. Now, that's yet another implication of the European Constitution, which is alarming those countries because they don't wish to be disconnected from having the British monarch as also their head of state. And a number of other consequences follow from that. For example, the laws of Canada and the laws of Australia are largely derived from British laws.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Mr. Bennett, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still with you.
You'll go right ahead then.
The point I was making is that there are 16 other countries in the world which depend on having the British monarchy as the head of its state, the head of state of Australia, the head of state of Canada, and so on. And one of the questions that some of us are asking about the European Constitution is whether in time it will mean the phasing out of the British monarchy. The British monarchy still plays a very significant role in the affairs of our country. One thing you may not know in the United States and Canada, for example, is that every Tuesday, by long convention, the Prime Minister travels to Buckingham Palace to meet and discuss politics with the Queen. This is a weekly audience, sometimes cancelled because the Queen is out of the country or the Prime Minister has other business or something like that. But this is a weekly tradition which has gone on for centuries. And it does show you, I think, that the Queen still is able to exert an influence. And we know that she has done it when there have been crises in our country. The monarchy still plays a role. And, of course, going back to the Second World War, the monarchy played a most active role in supporting the Prime Minister and supporting the war effort. So we are very concerned that with the European Union, the European Commission and all the European organisations taking more and more power, they will effectively not only nullify our Parliament, but also completely remove the Queen's influence. And possibly there may be moves further down the line to abolish these monarchies.
And of course, I think that what they want to do is destroy your traditions, destroy the continuity of your people by, of course, bringing in people who have nothing in common with people already living there, and by so doing, simply to destroy the very essence of what Great Britain is and merge it into this European Union. And then, of course, the whole idea is to merge you eventually into a world government, because that is the ultimate goal behind everything going on today, and that is the big forces being largely driven from right here in the United States, which is funding so much of this. And the average American has no idea that our leaders, the people who really run America, not our politicians, because we have the finest politicians money could buy, but the people who really run America have a different agenda, have a different outlook, have a different goal. In my opinion, they worship a different God, and they want a one-world government. They want a one-world religion. They want a one-world leader, and they're working as rapidly as they can to accomplish that. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Tony Bennett, and we were simply talking about the effort to destroy the heritage of Great Britain, probably down the line to do away with the monarchy. You're not going to need them because Britain will no longer be a sovereign nation nor will, of course, the other members of the Commonwealth be aligned with her. They will, of course, be excluded or perhaps put into other regional groups, and that's the ultimate plan. Well, Mr. Bennett, do you have a website, any information, books, or anything you'd like to let our listeners know about?
Well, our organisation is called the Campaign for a Referendum on the European Constitution, or CREC. We certainly do have a website. I'll give it you now if you like. It's www.european-referendum.org.uk. There are many organisations that are campaigning one way or another against the European Union. There is a political party in the United Kingdom called the United Kingdom Independence Party, which now has two seats in the House of Lords and one in the Parliament. I wonder if I could just go back to the point that you were developing about the heritage and the loss of heritage, because although perhaps I was pessimistic about the extent to which we are resisting the globalization and the attack on our nationhood and traditions, there have been some successes.
All right, fine, you go ahead and tell us.
And I'd like to just share a couple of those with you. Possibly the most important is the fact that we have kept our own currency against the strong wish of the political elite to remove it. Now, if we go back in time 4 or 5 years ago, the political elite was very ready to bounce us into adopting the euro. They spent millions of pounds, tens of millions of pounds, on a preparation program. The program was called Prepare and Decide. And they had us all ready. The opinion polls were running towards accepting the euro, and there was an almighty effort by many organizations to campaign to keep our currency. And to cut a long story short, that was successful. We still have our own currency, and there is no immediate prospect of our having to give our currency up. So that is one victory we've achieved. Another one, to some extent, is the attack on our system of weights and measures, which, as I understand it, in Canada there has been a strong drift towards going metric, but in the United States, as I understand it, it remains very much United States weights and measures, very similar to British weights and measures. To give you one specific example, there was a proposal 10 years ago to replace all our 2 million road signs, which are in miles, yards, feet and inches, with signs in metric, which would have cost £1 billion and been extraordinarily difficult to achieve. And again, with various organisations fighting this, for example the British Weights and Measures Association, we've beaten that off, and the government has given in. 2 years ago they announced that they would no longer proceed with this programme. So although the government said that over 40 years ago that Britain would go metric in the next few years, we have successfully resisted that. So I think there is a healthy spirit of rebellion, if you like, or resistance amongst the British people. I wish it were stronger, but it is still there, as those two examples help to show you, I think.
All right, certainly I agree with you. I think that, of course, these were all peripheral issues. I think it's each important, and, of course, hopefully it will tend to get the British people to understand that there is an overall agenda. But, of course, until somehow this affects them individually, whether it be changing miles to kilometers or pounds to kilograms, these are all little things. But they're all part of the other side's plan. Believe me, there is another side. There are people there who know exactly what they're doing. And the whole idea is to unite the whole world under one system and, of course, one currency and eventually, of course, one religion and one leader. And this going step by step by step. Of course, from a Christian point of view, it should be very obvious to any Christian to understand that this new leader is certainly not going to be a Christian at all. He is going to be a representative of the new world religion. We've had a request that you repeat your web page again very slowly, twice, so that people would be able to write that down. What is the web page again, one more time?
Right, our campaign is www.european-referendum.org.uk.
All right, european-referendum.org.uk.
And in fact, if you type in the words European referendum on Google or Yahoo or any of the main search engines, you should find us listed quite high up. We are the campaign for a referendum on the European Constitution, and if you just type in those two words, European referendum, our organisation will come up, and also other organisations that are campaigning to secure a referendum. I should say, by the way, Dr. Stan, that if anybody's following this closely in America, there is a most interesting development coming up on the 9th and 10th of June. A wealthy conservative businessman called Stuart Wheeler has brought a high court action to try and prove that the government must give us a referendum. In other words, he's trying to prove to the courts that it's illegal to refuse us a referendum. Now, this is a two-stage process, and I'm pleased to say that the first stage of his court action, which was held a couple of weeks ago, was successful. The court gave him permission to go to a full High Court hearing, and that will be heard on the 9th and 10th of June. And what he is applying for is that the government, in effect, be ordered by the court to hold a referendum. Now, that's an almost unprecedented legal development, and we were quite surprised that the courts gave it a first hearing, if you like, and allowed it to go on to a second hearing. But it is just possible, I suppose, that and we understand the legal arguments are very strong, that the courts could even order the British government to hold a referendum. And I think it's worth making this point as well, that if we were to get this referendum, if either through the courts or the Queen refusing to give permission, if we had that referendum, without a shadow of a doubt, the British people would vote down this Lisbon Treaty, the European Constitution. There's no doubt about it, that at all. The opinion polls suggest 70%, 80%, 90% would vote against it. Now, that would in turn, without a shadow of a doubt also, begin a process of disentangling us from the European Union. And that is what is at stake here. That is why the powers that be will not give us that referendum, because it would not just be about the Lisbon Treaty, but if we rejected the Lisbon Treaty in the United Kingdom, it would no doubt start a process whereby the people would demand that we had a proper vote on leaving the European Union altogether. And the powers that be, the political elite, are so scared that they dare not give us this referendum.
In other words, they really don't care what the people want. You have an elite, and of course they have their agenda entirely different than that of the people. All the talk of democracy is just, it is just talk. It's smoke and mirrors. It's rhetoric over reality. The elite have their agenda, and they intend to carry this out. They've been working at it for a long time. Our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question for Mr. Bennett, just be with us for about 10 minutes more. And, of course, this is such an important issue because, of course, what is happening in Europe is simply a reflection of what the power elite in the United States want. And, of course, this is what they're doing with us. They're going to unite the United States with North America, with the other two major countries, Canada and Mexico. And then once that is accomplished, of course, they intend to unite South America. And that, of course, they'll all united under initially under the idea of common trade. Who could be against common trade? And then, of course, the next step will be, well, maybe what we need is a bureaucracy that will enforce the new laws that we've created, because after all, your sovereign laws aren't going to matter. We can't have the same laws for Canada and the United States, or Mexico and the United States. And then we've got to begin to merge the police. Then we've got to merge the currency. Then we've got to have some sort of a parliament to make sure that this is representative of the people. But they're not interested in representation. They're not interested in what the people want. They have a long-term goal, a new world order, a new world religion, and enthroning a new world leader. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for Mr. Bennett, has anybody talked to the Queen to see where her sympathies are, Mr. Bennett? Do we know?
Well, has anybody...
Has anybody talked to the Queen of England to see if she would be willing to intervene on the top of the people?
Well, by tradition, the Queen is above politics.
She doesn't
enter the political realm. There are two indications we've had in the last few years. 5 years ago, we ran a similar campaign, exactly the same as now, with a purple postcard campaign. Very successful. And as a result of that, we got the promise of a referendum. Now, during that campaign, two things happened. First of all, we got a message from the Queen's secretary in writing that she had asked her staff to count the number of cards being received. Now, we regarded that as significant. Why would the Queen take an interest in the number of cards being received? Clearly, I think, because she was looking, we would say, she was looking to see what support there was for a referendum. And so the very fact that there is an official in Buckingham Palace counting these cards as they come in, we think is significant. Possibly even more significant than that is that we do know on the public record that the Queen has taken independent legal advice on the European Constitution and on this Lisbon Treaty. Now, the significance of that is this, that by tradition in our country, under what's called a constitutional monarchy since 1688, by convention, the Queen has to follow the advice of government ministers. And it's always presumed that they give her good advice. But on this occasion, it appears they're giving her unconstitutional advice. And that is why it was almost unprecedented for the Queen to be reported to have consulted her own lawyers. In other words, she went to a barrister, a top barrister, to get a legal opinion on the effect of this European constitution on the monarchy, on the government of this country. And perhaps I could just say to you that the words we finish our postcard, if I could just give your listeners this, the last sentence in our postcard addressed to the Queen says this, quote, "Your Majesty may by convention have to follow government advice when giving royal assent, but equally the government must not give you unconstitutional advice." And that is the point here, Dr. Stan, that our government is advising the Queen that she can faithfully sign this treaty into law and there will be no adverse consequences for our constitution. On the contrary, this Lisbon Treaty, this European Constitution, has the most grave implications for this Constitution, which, after all, has been built up piecemeal over 1,000 years, and we want to keep it.
Amen. I certainly agree with you. I hope maybe you'll try to encourage your people over there in Great Britain, when they can, to listen to our programs. You know, we do have if they go to RadioLiberty.com, they can listen to actually 9 hours a day of our program and 9 hours a day of Joyce Riley's program. So we talk about so many issues, but of course they all influence you and the survival of your country. Let's go quickly to Dean, who's calling us from Ontario, Canada. We have a lot of listeners in Canada. I know we have some in Great Britain. We'd like to hear from them more regularly. But hi, Dean. How are you doing?
Well, okay.
Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Oh, good evening from a high-vending line to British occupied North America.
You're going to have to speak up a little louder, Dean, please.
Oh, sorry. Good evening from behind enemy lines in British-occupied North America, which is a good idea where my sentiments lay. I just had an observation that had to deal with contacting the Queen to interfere with the state. We had a similar event that happened here about 2.5 years ago, where Parliament expanded the definition of marriage to include homosexuals within the Marriage Act. And I myself wrote to the Queen, care of the Governor-General. And obviously, my research, which was very extensive, wasn't enough, or perhaps they didn't quote me well enough, for the bill received royal assent. Now, we know that marriage goes back to common law, and common law is the standard. Which, and this means, obviously, that you can't fudge with a standard. But, unfortunately, Parliament didn't see it that way. And so, me being a peaceful, law-abiding Canadian citizen had to call the Crown of England in. And I guess she must have agreed with Parliament because the bill did receive royal assent. But I didn't follow through with my eyes closed, because I really didn't, as you explained to Dr. Stan, I really don't trust the Crown of England, because they're hand in glove with the IMF and all sorts of other issues, too, with the global agenda.
All right, fine.
Well, I decided to exhaust all my peaceful means anyway.
All right, well, I appreciate so much your call and letting us know what happened there, Dean. Thanks an awful lot. Did you have any thoughts on that, Tony, before we let Dean go?
Well, just a brief response that, like I said, the Queen traditionally is above politics. She gets asked to intervene on all manner of matters, including that topic which has been addressed in this country as well.
In other words, the idea of course, homosexuality and legalizing homosexual marriage, you're speaking of.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, many of the laws passed in the last 50 years are strongly anti-Christian. There's no doubt about that at all.
Amen to that. Well,
but the Queen traditionally doesn't intervene. But this is something that perhaps even more basic, which goes to the heart of our constitution. So we think that this is a case where she could intervene.
Well, somebody has called in, wanted to know if you knew anything about the position of the Rothschild family as far as this European Union or this effort to do away with British sovereignty. Is there any talk over there about the Rothschild family position, these things?
It doesn't feature in any of our discussions, but I'm aware, obviously, that the Rothschilds is the premier banking family of Europe and one of the key institutions in the world. But exactly what the nature of the relationship between the Rothschilds and politics and the Queen is these days, I don't know. It's not a name that features in the discussions we're having in the United Kingdom at the moment.
All right, fine. That's the answer for our listener out there. And now we've got Roger calling from Allentown, and we'll be with Roger in just a moment. But right now, of course, our guest today has been Tony Bennett. And England, of course, is facing a crisis. I mean, we are perhaps seeing the demise of the sovereignty of Great Britain. And, of course, American traditions, American law was based upon the Magna Carta, and certainly the traditions of Great Britain when our founders broke away from Great Britain, but many of the ideas of Britain, certainly Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, were the foundation of our constitution, the foundation of our law here. So what happens to Great Britain is going to have a great deal of influence upon what's going to happen here in the United States. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Mr. Bennett, please stay on the line for a minute. We'll take the call from Roger from Allentown in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Roger, are you there?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to ask, is it correct, as I've heard, that unlike here, you have some true independence in the newspapers' respective camps? And if so, are there any reasonably influential or large circulation newspapers, or certainly access to them?
All right, fine. The first question is, are there any independent newspapers over there that will tell the truth as it is?
Yeah, conservative in particular, of course.
Right.
Well, I think I've partially answered that by comparing the UK media to the Danish media in the referendum they had on their currency. The British media are certainly nominally independent and editorially free. However, there is not one major national newspaper that it goes even close to recommending that Britain should leave the European Union. Probably the best read newspaper, which is EU critical of the EU, would be the Daily Mail. But they still support our membership of the European Union. You'd have to go to the provincial press, and even there, probably the most sceptical newspaper that I can think of is the Western Morning News, which covers southwest England. But even there, I don't think the editors go so far as to say that we should leave the European Union. I may be wrong about that, but there is near unanimity amongst the main media, TV, radio, newspapers, that this country needs to stay in the European Union.
All right, there's your answer.
Amongst the people, it's much more 50-50.
All right, thanks very much, Roger. Appreciate your call. And, of course, our guest is Mr. Tony Bennett. And you've got about a minute to wrap up the program. And we do hope that we can get some more listeners over there in Great Britain, because the issues we talk about here certainly do impact upon Great Britain as well. You have about a minute to wrap up the program before we let you go.
to sum up, I think, this is a very, very critical moment in our nation's history. Supremely critical. The next few months will probably see this bill go through the House of Commons, the House of Lords. We hope and pray that the Queen will defer it, but if she signs it into law, then we have lost our ability to run our own country. We have lost our ability to make our own laws. They will be imposed by the European Union. And on top of all that, we will no longer be British citizens, but we will be compulsorily made citizens of the European Union. So this is a moment when we hope we can win, but if we lose, then I'm afraid it's probably downhill all the way.
I hope you'll keep in touch with us, Mr. Bennett. Thank you so very much for being with us.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we do hope, of course, that you enjoyed our conversation with Mr. Tony Bennett from Great Britain. And, of course, it's important that you understand that they're just a little bit more advanced than we are. But behind what's going on in Great Britain, behind what's going on here in North America and in South America and in Asia and in Africa and of course, in Pacific Rim countries, there's an organized plan to create a one-world government, a one-world religion, and bring into power a one-world ruler. And, of course, once you begin to understand that, you begin, of course, to understand that we have very, very powerful spiritual forces behind everything that's going on. Because, of course, this one-world leader, I'm firmly convinced, will be the Antichrist. A lot of Christians say, well, that's not going to affect me. I'm going to, of course, be raptured out of here before anything bad happens. And I say, but what happens if the rapture occurs 30 years after these terrible, terrible things have come to pass? Are you absolutely certain? And, of course, there's been a conscious effort to neutralize the Christians with that theology or with preaching Romans 13, just like they did in Hitler's Germany, that we would be totally subservient no matter what our rulers do, because after all, God put them in power, even if they advocate torture and murder and they've killed a million people over there in Iraq. Why, of course, we're to be obedient to them, and I think that we have an obligation to speak out. Because, of course, if you read Romans 13 very carefully, we are to be observant, we are to be simply subservient to the leaders, because they're put in power by God to do good. And when they're doing evil, of course, why, it's an entirely different situation. And God gave the United States a republican form of government with a constitution and, of course, what God has created. They're wicked and evil people who have undercut at every turn. We hope many of you will want to get some of the material we have. We have something called Betrayed by the Bench, a wonderful book by John Stromer, going into how they've distorted and certainly changed the whole thrust of our government. If you haven't read John's other books, None Dare Call It Treason, and None Dare Call It Treason 25 Years Later, we have these. To put things into their proper spiritual perspective, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the DVD on that. In fact, if you can't afford it, it's available at our website at radioliberty.com. We hope you'll go to that website and get the material. That is, of course, the story of the Brotherhood of Darkness. We hope that you'll want to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. It comes with a syllabus. We hope you'll want to get my talk on the Planned Police State, which comes with a syllabus. We hope that you'll want to get the talk on sustainable development, which comes with a syllabus. If you want to understand why your electricity bill is going up, you need to get my talk and 4-tape set and syllabus on the electricity crisis. If you want to understand why oil is going up, you need to get the book we carry called The Energy Non-Crisis and the 4-tape set, The Oil Deception. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com and look at it. We have all sorts of information there. And then going into the spiritual background of what's going on are the DVDs on the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, the Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Because when America was founded as an independent nation, the occult forces were already there. They were going to use the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a world government. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they're working full-time to accomplish that goal, and we need your help to get the information out. We do hope that Many of you will take this opportunity to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, that you'll encourage others to listen to our programs. If you have access to the Internet, you can listen 9 hours a day to my talks and similar numbers to Sydney, to and just listening on the Internet to Joyce Riley and Chuck Chrismeyer. But we have 24-hour Christian programming at RadioLiberty.net. And, of course, you can get a satellite if you'd like to and listen to those on your own satellite, or you can listen to it on the Internet and hear my programs and Joyce programs each 9 hours a day. Well, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. And please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5KU Band.